Okay, we're live. Everyone should be there.
Good morning.
Hello, and welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board a little late this morning, but we're here. SP Futures up 87, NASDAQ Futures up 448. Andrew and Wayne both are long spooy here and very happy, and they're going to cash out and go have a big martini brunch. Is that the truth?
Yes, you just named the place and the time.
It's I guess, you know, what is it? I have some pretty serious questions for you dudes, but what is it that rubs me wrong about this guy who runs NVIDIA? I mean, it's probably very unfair because I've never met the guy, but something about him. I don't know. I wouldn't consider him an American company at this point. I don't know. What is tickling my head, the back of my neck with this guy? Is it just me, or you guys feel the same way?
Well, my problem with NVIDIA is it sounds like some sort of a disease.
Yeah.
I mean, branding is everything, and you know, but Trump seems to love it.
There's this
NVIDIA,
this interplay between him and this guy in China. I don't know if we've got the smartest man in this mix. Those guys, I think, are taking him to the cleaners on this. I don't know why I get that feeling. It's probably not true, but I'm, you know, it's just a suspicion.
Well, look at his performance over at the summit where he met in South Korea, met Xi. After putting these tariffs, which is a national sales tax that's raised the price of almost everything, then he says, "Oh yeah, we're great friends. We know each other real well, and we're working things out." You know, there's just something about this that doesn't ring true.
Don't forget, part of that South Korea was they gave him a crown.
Oh God!
Shouldn't that be in private? But when they're bragging about it, you think?
when he was in Sinai for that ridiculous, I'm still trying to figure out what that international summit was on Gaza, because people in Gaza are still dying. But, you know, he went over to Sharm el-Sheikh in Sinai. I thought, wouldn't it be fitting to have given Trump a golden calf, which would fit right into the area he was at?
Well, I know I come from this from a very Southside Irish Catholic education, but this all of a sudden, maybe not sudden, this callousness towards human life that I'm sensing. I mean, I don't really have a problem in stopping drugs getting here. I see what's happening to people just walking down the street. I mean, it's way more horrible than most people think that it is. I mean, with the drugs people are taking now, it's not like it's booze and a little marijuana. These people are 40 years old. They look like they're 90. I mean, they're not coming back from this. This is, in my opinion, if we ever had a real assessment of what the damage has been done by these new drugs, I don't think we'd even want to look at it. But having said that, if you think somebody in a boat is carrying this stuff, you don't order the boat sunk. This isn't wartime. You interdict the thing. Of course, if they don't stop and they shoot at you, well then, yeah, you blast them. But the idea is to come up with some evidence to prove that you're right. And then his comment the other day about with this Saudi guy, who I think is a murderer and a torturer. I mean, this to say, what do you say about the guy, the newsman who was dead? Nobody liked him. Shit happens. What does that mean? I mean, does that mean?
Yeah, he said. He said this gentleman here. Then he told the ABC news reporter, "You're insubordinate. What, to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia on U.S. soil in the White House?" He's a guy. And you know, here again we have Trump disregarding what the CIA said. A CIA report stated that Mohammed bin Salman, I call him Mohammed Bone Salman, ordered Khashoggi, the Washington Post columnist, to be not only murdered but to be dismembered. While everything, you know, people are now wondering what did Trump discuss with the Saudi Crown Prince after the murder. I'm more interested in what Jared Kushner discussed with them before the murder.
Well, hey, sort of a kind of an odd wrap up to all the stuff we've been doing on the veterans. I actually attended a veteran's funeral yesterday out at the Lincoln. There's I think, guys, Andrew, you know more. Is the Lincoln Memorial National Cemetery for Veterans, is that a part of the old Joliet Arsenal? I'm not sure, but it's down like in Elwood. So it's a kick from Chicago. And I went down there, and Audrey's cousin, her husband, was a Vietnam Bronze Star kind of guy. He was there for a while. And
is it a national cemetery?
Yeah, it's a national military.
Yeah, well, veterans can be buried in any national cemetery. You know, a lot want to go into Arlington, but that's only now, I think, reserved for actual combat vets because they're running out of room.
This guy was, but I mean, they're... So, you know, yeah. They were cremated. Yeah, plus they let his wife go in too. They're in the wall with the cremated part, but the place right. is out literally in the middle of nowhere. We've
got one here in Florida that's out in the middle of nowhere, but you can be buried in any national cemetery. I looked up my great uncle who died in France during World War One, actually two days after the armistice, because they hadn't gotten a word on the front lines yet that
Great.
The war was over. But he was from Philadelphia, but he's buried out in the Presidio in San Francisco.
Really?
I mean, I guess they put you wherever there's room.
Didn't they write a book about him? Yeah. The day was it All Quiet on the Western Front? The last guy killed.
Yeah. God. Yeah, it's. It wasn't all quiet right away, unfortunately.
No.
But I still recall when, you know, Trump didn't want to go to the cemetery in France because he didn't want to get his hair wet because it was raining.
Well, this place has
the 100th anniversary of the armistice.
They can do like six funerals at the same time, and they've got these things that look like. You ever go out on an old golf course before people had carts, and there was all these kind of rain shelters with the roof and the posts on the side, but there's no walls.
Like an awning.
They're permanent, but they look like those with kind of a little bit, I won't call it an altar, but a thing in the front to put stuff down in it. And it's, fortunately, yesterday it was cold, but it wasn't windy. But if it's raining and it's really windy, you're going to get wet inside this thing. Anyway, but the people there are so nice, it is scary. I mean, there's no way you cannot have a tear in your eye. There's two guys.
Yeah.
He was in the Army. There's two guys from the Army, this very decorated white guy, very decorated black guy, and they open up the flag, then they refold it and hand it to you. They do it just perfectly. Then they've got all these guys from the Wilmington VFW. There's like seven or eight guys. There's the guy playing taps. There's a guy in charge of every, you know, tent's hut and all that stuff, and there's like five guys shooting. And they won't, you know, they just donate their time, and... you know, thank you for your service. There's a letter signed by the president and all that stuff. But this guy was in NAM and he came back and he was a smoker and, you know, cancer the whole bit. But, you know, he was there for a while with a bronze star and a bunch of other stuff. And anyway, but it was, you know, there was only a few people there. I mean, everybody else is dead. But it was, you know, it's impressive. I mean, it's the people, the guys that do their time. So the old guys are from this, the VFW in Wilmington, right? So, of course, I kick up the VFW. I said, we got to go to the VFW. We got to leave a big tip at least, for God's sake. You know? Do something for these guys. And so I look at the menu. And my question to you, I don't know about you, and Andrew might be man enough. The half-pound burger is $7.99. The double is $10.99. Are we man enough for the double?
Used to be.
I say used to be. We used to drop that like a bad habit, remember? But no, I don't know.
I'd be more interested in how much was the beer.
I think it was like $2 or something. It's not much.
I don't know how they do it. If those prices must somehow be subsidized. I don't think you can buy it at the supermarket for that.
They're tax exempt, of course, because of their status. So.
I think you could go. Last time I was at the Myers, you could get a case was like $19 or something. I mean, you can if you get whatever it's Coors or whatever. But if you get it on sale,
I was talking about the hamburger.
Oh, the hamburger! Yeah, I don't know how they're doing that. I mean, God, the price of burgers is to the moon. But you know, these guys, they still. because Doctor, you know, you guys were part of the veterans thing last week, and I mean, as Dr. Johnson was saying, there aren't as many organizations for these guys to guys and ladies to pile into now that are support organizations. He says there were like 25 after World War II, and we're down to like four or five of them now.
And that's right, because you know, there's really not that, after we went to all volunteer, there's not that many veterans. I mean, there are a lot, but percentage wise, you're talking after World War II, and then again after Korea, the numbers started to go down. Of course, with Vietnam, there was still a draft, and I mean, that's why I went in the Navy. Is Nixon got rid of the college deferments in 1971, and I was fair game by 72. The war was still going on.
When he got rid of the student deferments, I think I know this because a few of my buddies didn't have a high number like me. The deal was no student deferment, but you couldn't go to NAM. One of my guys drove a truck in Europe for 2 years. My other guy was a tank mechanic in Alaska, believe it or not.
It was a tough call for me because I wound up going into the Navy ROTC in Mississippi, but I always wondered whether South Vietnam would have been a better option for me.
Well, one of the guys who used to work for PTI was in the Navy, but the Navy jets landed on land in Vietnam, and you followed your jets. He was in country, even though he was in the Navy.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. If the last war, wasn't the World War One supposed to be the Great War? Anyway, but if you go to some of these states like Ohio and places, all these reservists or people in the, I'll say, National Guard, all got called up. I mean, so if you were the mechanics, tank mechanics group in Columbus, Ohio, you spent time in Afghanistan. Now, if you do that and you come back, are you considered a veteran for veterans homes? Are you considered GI Bill? What does that give you? You're still National Guard, right?
Yeah, no, you're still, you know, you get the still get the benefits.
Okay, you do.
And if you were in combat, which a lot of these people were, you know, that's even better for your veterans status, which, you know, it's a graded thing. They have different categories. If you're a wounded veteran, you're priority one, or if you're disabled, you're priority one. Now, I was priority five, but then Biden did this PACT Act thing. If you were exposed to toxic substances when you were on active duty, so they deemed that I was something very similar to, you know, what coal miners inhale, real fine carbon dust, and so I jumped from priority five up to priority one. You know, I kind of felt bad about it because, you know, I go to the VA hospital, I see other priority ones. These guys don't have any legs and stuff. Yeah, you know, yes. I mean, I can still walk.
Well, what's with this? How come I've had 5-6 listeners calling? And don't forget to talk about the burn pits. What in God's name were those things?
Well, this goes back to the first Desert Storm. So they were burning just about everything they found in Iraq and in Kuwait, and they didn't know what they were burning. And you know, the thought is that some of this stuff they were ordered to burn were chemical munitions.
Oh, and
you get you know, so we still don't, you know, it's called the desert war syndrome, and it's sort of like this other thing that State Department people suffered from, this sort of thing that, you know, this auditory problem. They never did really figure out what it was, but I gotta say, President Biden said to heck with it. If you're exposed to this kind of stuff, it's not going to be, including Agent Orange in Vietnam. Those guys didn't get anything for a long time. And Biden said, look, cut this crap. If a doctor says you were exposed to something that's affected your health, you're going to be covered. and that's what happened. So whether it was desert war syndrome or the burn pits, they also were using these 55-gallon drums to burn human waste. Now,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Same kind of stuff. Not human waste, I hope, but it happened in 9/11. 9/11 had people working there. God knows what was burning in that place.
Oh, well, not to mention all the asbestos that was in the air. By the way, when Trump ordered the East Wing bulldozed and demolished, nobody took into consideration that when that was built, there was asbestos in there. So
you got to be kidding. They didn't put a tent over it?
No, nothing.
That's unreal. Andrew, were you at the Comey hearing?
Yes, yesterday.
Yeah, you got to. I've been dying all the way coming back from Elwood yesterday. I'm thinking, I got to ask Andrew, was he there? What happened?
Well, a bunch of things. And the biggest stuff was not even kind of on the agenda. Let's see how I should approach this. I'll start with what the hearing was supposed to be about. It was supposed to be about proving the very difficult legal issue, in most cases, of whether it's a vindictive and or selective prosecution. And so the theory is, by the defense, the argument, and they have the burden of proof, is Trump has been upset with Comey for a long time. He's visibly called for investigations and speedy grand jury and so forth, so that on its face, this is an extreme case when the general rule is it's very hard to prove the motivations. But here you have the president calling for the prosecution and the removal of the U.S. attorney who refused to go ahead with the prosecution and the substitution of his White House staff attorney, Lindsey Halligan, with no prosecution experience. So that's what the hearing was supposed to be about. But the process continues to reveal all kinds of irregularities, and that led to an explosive revelation, along with a very strong case that this was a vindictive prosecution. Now, one of the confusing aspects here is that there's a missing 2 hours of the, or seemingly 2 hours of the transcript. So the various judges hearing this have asked for all of the grand jury materials, in part because when the indictment was returned, there were two sets of indictments signed by the new U.S. attorney, Lindsey Halligan. And let's see where we should go from here.
Well, who's the lady? Who's the lady that said that the grand jury never saw? Was that her?
Part of the confusion here. Yes, that was her. You're getting to the end. So. The judge cuts through a lot of confusion.
Well, that's why I'm asking you the detail. I only heard the end.
Yeah. He says, how can there be, if 2 hours of missing transcripts, and she gave an affidavit Friday. Well, there's no missing time. I just, my last comments to the grand jury were 4:28 p.m. and they came back at 6:40 or so p.m. So the judge is undertaking questioning of the government attorney, not her. And he gets off on a thing, well, I can't really talk about some things. And he says, why not? And they said, well, I'm under instructions. And he to get to the end of this setup of the discussion here, he says, well, let's, she's the attorney of record, let's ask her. And he says, look, did you go back to the grand jury? And she said, essentially, no. We had the foreman and the deputy foreman sign the indictment. And he says, was that in the grand jury room? Where were the rest of the grand juries? And they get into a back and forth discussion. And she's a little snippy. And he says, you may sit down now. And there we have it. And what the pundits are saying is, and in fact, one of Comey's main defense attorneys said, it looks like we don't even have an indictment here. if the grand jury didn't approve the indictment, only the foreman and the deputy foreman, that's not the way it's supposed to work. So that's the setup or the answer to your question. And various pundits who are quite experienced in this have said they've never heard of anything like this.
Well, what was the person that she said she was under instructions to not discuss? Isn't that the Trump personal attorney who's now like second in command at the Department of Justice?
Yes, it sounds like you've followed this. Except she didn't say it. They had to bring in an attorney from the Justice Department in North Carolina, Tyler Lemons, because none of the Eastern District of Virginia attorneys would have had anything to do with this, including yesterday. So he was the one who responded to that question.
How would you like to be this judge?
I mean, well, that's what they sign up to do. There's actually about three or four judges involved in this, and it's I'll just say it's pretty impressive to see how they handle this stuff, because you're dealing with law at the highest levels where the different parties are citing different precedents, and they've got to not only look like they're in control, but be in control. And as near as I can see, I'm covering this fairly thoroughly, the hearings, they're up to the job.
Well, it seems like that. I don't think anybody who has been alive as long as we have don't realize that humans will act in somewhat nefarious ways. I mean, it's not like the Justice Department didn't know when Biden was in office that, you know, some of the Republicans were the enemy. I mean, but I've never seen a guy as flat out right on TV saying it and then expecting people to. I mean, Biden maybe was too sleepy or too dumb or whatever. He never went out and said, "Go get this guy," like this guy does. I mean, it's. I mean, it's right there. I've never seen it in your face quite like this.
Well, to just temporarily switch topics to another thing in the news, the Epstein case. It now looks like after all of this effort to sign into law and get the congressional votes to release the Epstein files, he said a week ago, let's investigate all the Democrats.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's going to be used as an excuse to hold up releases, obviously, of information, saying, it's under investigation. And it'd be like his own tax returns. Remember how he'd always say, well, I can't release anything about my taxes like other presidents, because there's an audit, you know, which continues forever.
Forever. Oh, yeah. It's a forever audit.
But going back to the, to this, it made me think, to some extent, of everything from your show to just people at a supermarket where, and here's why I was thinking of that, things that people do that routinely because they know how to do it. You know, the person at the supermarket, at the cash register. Well, it takes actually some knowledge to do that, and certainly to run your show, which you do every day. But if you took somebody off the street and just said, okay, start up the radio show or go to the cash register at the supermarket, they wouldn't know how to do it. But that's what they did with this prosecution. They took basically somebody with a law degree and said, okay, here's your target, the former FBI director and the New York State Attorney General. Get the grand jury indictment.
Well, the Attorney General isn't much better when it comes to prosecuting federal cases. There's a report now that Mark Epstein, who's Jeffrey Epstein's brother, who's in charge of the Epstein Trust, where a lot of these emails came from, he's saying he's heard from sources that that the Justice Department has destroyed a lot of the Epstein files and dossiers and material at some location in Virginia. Now, he wasn't any more specific than that, but, if that is the case and this information is being destroyed, that would probably make, Watergate look like a jaywalking violation.
Well, it's interesting. Andrew, you mentioned that I was sitting next to an attorney last night watching all this stuff. His comment was the same as yours. How can somebody make that mistake? What is it? They won you out of law school or what?
Well, some of the commentators on this, and I've watched a bunch of them, and some of them are there that, you talk to outside the courthouse. They say you wouldn't dream of bringing somebody in, even in a normal civil case, who didn't know what they were doing without having somebody experienced next to them. In fact, just a quick personal story. Just as I was graduating from the University of Chicago Law School 35 years ago, my mother wanted me to get involved in a situation and file a case, and I said, well, I don't know. And she said, what's the point of having that kid if he won't sue some bum? I
tell you what, I really wish I could have met your mother. She sounds like something unreal.
Well, actually, she decided to go back to college, and she didn't get a good grade, and she wanted me to just sue the professor. But the point of the story,
your dad had to be a saint.
Well, he was. This was my burden. But the end of the story is I got a quote from the head of the University of Chicago Law School, Jeffrey Stone, and he said it would be malpractice if one of our graduates filed a lawsuit with less than a year or two experience. And I was able to get off the hook by sending that. But, that's the general concept. And she was sent in and willingly agreed to go in to do this and managed to screw it up at every level in a way that reflects not simply on her, but the people she's working with above her, and it reflects well on the people below her because they don't want to have anything to do with it. But the people above her, they're trying to justify this now, and I'll leave with one or two thoughts here. One, how bad it is if you go after big people like this in an obvious way is retribution. But two, the maybe more important point, is what else is going on with people with this mentality affecting ordinary people, including people in the business community or just anybody, because most people are not going to have the ability to penetrate these kinds of decisions.
Can you imagine being a firm that doesn't go kiss the mistletoe? You're not going to get a contract. You're not going to get anything from this guy.
Well, there's just a New York Times investigative report about the Commerce Secretary's children making hay or moolah.
Well, last Friday, you guys don't watch this stuff as much as I don't want to bug you with memos, but we had an 800 point. By the way, we're up 475 today in the Nasdaq. We had an 800 point move. Is it on Friday or Monday? Is it blurring together from the lows to the highs in the Nasdaq? And all of a sudden, after the close, it was the Trump pulling back on tariffs on agricultural products. And I'm thinking, I got to believe some people got that little memo ahead of me. I mean, it's. But you know, I want to. You guys, I had a thought this morning that I wanted to ask kind of an esoteric question on government. And of course, Andrew, as you omnisciently always do, you lead me right to that question. Every time the CPI comes out, we always talk about the adjustments in there. And the idea is actually one of the guests on the show, his mom actually used to gather stuff up for the CPI, right? Mike Murphy's mom. So I can't imagine that when she went out and I think she did like rice and noodles or something. I mean, he told me once, I forgot probably, in the Cleveland area. So I got to believe that his mom is as honest as a day is long, went out and she gives them all the numbers. And somewhere up the chain, you'll see rice or bread or noodles, and you'll see, you know, it's up 0.1%, adjusted number, down 0.1 or up 0.3. And I'm thinking, where exactly along the chain? I don't think that's coming from the Oval Office. Somebody somewhere along the way, some bureaucratic creature, decides to make that change. Now, I don't know why they do or who they do or what level where the person gets to do that. Now, fast forward to all the crap that's going out here in Broadview, picking up all these Hispanic people, whether they happen to be criminals or not, just as long as they're Hispanic, they're picking them up, right, which is bizarre. Well, the Trump groups lets out, I don't know if you guys read this, this week the summary was, now we have the Kristi Noem and a couple of court cases basically saying you can't just randomly pick people up, and her story was, they're going to be warrants. They're going to be the worst of the worst. Well, it turns out of the 640 people that they picked up, only 16 of them had criminal warrants. 16 out of 640. Ooh. This is coming from the administration. So my question is, did the guy here, and he looked like, you know, a guy who didn't really care about people too much. That's just my view from TV, so don't take that to the bank. Now, I can't believe that he did that on his own. I mean, but what? So what's the high sign? Is Kristi Noem giving
this Greg Bovino?
Yeah, I'm saying, but does she give him a secret note? I mean, she's not. There's no way she's going to put her name on a piece of paper that says pick everybody up, not just the criminals. Is it a secret handshake? Is it a secret salute?
I got a theory about that. That is maybe not just a theory, but it's from observation, including it in this Comey case. If you hire people, whether to compile a statistics or in court or immigration, who basically believe the end justifies the means, and if at least some of them have an education and know how to manipulate the rules, then you get the result without the top person having to get their fingerprints on it. So in this case, let's say Comey, and I'll go back to statistics, but in the case of Comey, Halligan has and others have been reported as saying, well, they didn't get specific instructions from the Attorney General, and so they're keeping their distance, and they're ratifying the actions after the fact, and the judge is saying, how can you ratify it when there's missing information? That came up yesterday. So they're keeping their distance, but they hire people who know what the desired result is without instructions. In fact, in the hearing yesterday, there is a Shakespearean reference to Henry II, and they didn't go into it, just a brief comment, but the relevant reference is, will no one rid me of this whatever?
Meddlesome priest.
Yes. So, you know, it's almost a mob type of instruction. You know, no specific order, but just a general sense of irritation. And going to your example of statistics, well, you're right, the ordinary government workers are probably just doing assembling the data, but what's important to realize, and I'm sure you realize it as well as almost all of your listeners, but I'll mention it anyway, these are estimates, they're not counts. So they're counting is part of the process, but that leads to estimates, because obviously the government can't count up every statistic every month or so. So they're drawing larger patterns from the data that they do collect. And it's at that process, the larger patterns, where you get someone in there that has a mentality and justifies the means. We want the presidency to be successful. And with a bit of education and knowledge of the system, they can affect the estimation algorithm, is my theory.
Well, I just, my question, I mean, it's, I know you know that there's no answer to this, but how can anybody be, what if somebody, I don't know if anybody has, what if a couple people died in there, and all of a sudden there's a lawsuit, and this guy somehow gets on the stand, and they say, it looks to me like your instructions from, what's her name, Noam, these two court decisions where you're only supposed to incarcerate people that had a, you know, had a criminal warrant, and yet you didn't. Oh, is he going to say, I did that all on my own? I mean, I can't imagine.
Well, that's where the judge's questions came in, and the prosecutor, Lindsay Halligan, who I once met in just in an elevator some way, she seemed very friendly, but she's got a reputation of being quite snippy when it comes to this stuff. And in fact, she was kind of snippy with the judge yesterday. And he said, you may sit down.
Really?
I would just add, people have died here in Florida at ICE facilities. There's a very notorious one in Miami called the Chrome Detention Center, which is contracted out. It's an outsourced facility, but several people have died in there, including people that were not afforded their medication after they were picked up.
And the attitude is going to be like President Trump had on the Khashoggi killing. Well, it's very impolite to ask about that. You're insubordinate to the reporter. Things happen is the mentality. And an even more extreme example, Chief, is there's just a report that an estimated 600,000 people have died because of Trump administration cutbacks of basically eliminating USAID, the Agency for International Development. 600,000 people. And on Tuesday, I took to lunch at the press club a fired USAID employee and tried to give us some job advice, but that's 600,000 people. Now it's an estimate, not a count, because you're basically estimating starving and sick children around the world. But again, the people running this, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they don't care.
They don't seem to care.
And remember, Melania Trump was going down to, I think, Texas after the hurricane, and she had a jacket on, and it said on the back of it, "I really don't care."
Well, you know, I just, there's so much more to this, and that's why I like digging in with you guys. The first story is just the first story. I mean, this has kind of nothing to do with anything, but, you know, my last comment on some of the people that are in the ice, you know, on one hand, you have people on the show that are absolutely convinced that you're hiring decent people, you're sending in for at least 4 months training, and blah, blah, blah. And there's other people who, I see the commercial trying to get the Chicago policeman to join up saying you can now go arrest people where you couldn't before, basically. And I have a comment from one guy saying, hey, you're taking the Proud Boy out of the trailer, giving him 50 grand and telling him he can go rough up Hispanic people. I refuse to believe that's the case.
With a $50,000 bonus.
Yeah, I'm saying that. I refuse. I can't believe that, but I also don't believe the full training either. How do you get to the middle on something like that? I don't. These guys don't look. You don't ramp up something that fast if everybody's getting 4 months training. How could you?
Well, the first thing is leaders in various sectors, including the private sector, like you, but also elsewhere, who say this isn't right. And one of the kind of unreported stories, although maybe it's reported in Chicago a lot, is basically Illinois stood in opposition strong enough so that the Trump administration is pulling back from Chicago and Illinois and taking their act down to South Carolina. And
Charlotte, North Carolina. And
North Carolina.
And now Homan is saying New York is next. And now we got a report that the mayor-elect Mamdani has been invited to the White House to talk to Trump. I am so soured on what this administration is doing. It could be a trap. There are Republican congressmen right now that are calling for Mamdani to be arrested and deported, even though he's a U.S. citizen, trying to say he's a member of Al-Qaeda and all this nonsense. But right now we've got a severely mentally diminished president who spent all last night on Twitter complaining, amongst other things, about Jimmy Kimmel's show again.
Yeah, he's all over that. Well, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard this story here, and we've touched on, we haven't spent a lot of time on it because we're doing a lot of stuff on veterans, and we're talking about the market. By the way, S&P Futures is now up 104, NASDAQ up 514. Do you guys feel as saved by NVIDIA as the market does? I feel saved, don't you? Anyway, we've talked about the health care and how, do more of it with Carl, and how, you know, it's not just the cutting back on the money from the federal side, it's the, what we've allowed the combinations and we've allowed that industry essentially to do. And my observations have been, and nobody's really argued with me much, I don't know that many people that even have a personal physician anymore. And certainly younger people generally don't. And I think certainly a lot of people that are on Medicaid probably don't. I mean, there's this lady here. She went to some hospital. I forget the name of the hospital. She shows up, and I believe me, I'm no OB-GYN, but somehow or another, she's in pain. They turn her away. She goes to her car in a parking lot, and 10 minutes later, pops out a baby or something bizarre like that. Right? And so now the hospital is making amends, and they're doing this, and they're apologizing. And I think whoever kicked her out, they fired her. To me, and I think you guys, that's why I love talking to you, okay, that's the tip of the iceberg. I'm going to bet that she had no prenatal care. I'll bet she had no OB-GYN, nobody on her own. Is one day when labor started, just showed up and said, "Here I am." And I mean, I guess I fault the hospital, but it's not like that's the way it's supposed to be. You show up when you got labor. If that's, where's the care along the line? Did she see anybody along? I mean, I think a lot of that's going on. I think a lot of people have just opted out of the system because they can't afford it.
Well, there'd be a lot more, and unfortunately, the way that the public can sometimes respond is ineffectual. And here's a kind of conservative argument that I'll endorse. And the argument is, you get these extreme cases, and then people go to court, and the jury is sympathetic and imposes a multi-million dollar verdict on the hospital and its insurance companies, and the jurors feel at least that they've done something right. But from a society viewpoint, slapping the hospital with a multi-million dollar verdict is not the most efficient way to solve these problems. It takes, as you said, availability of basic care, not a lottery system where most people lose and a few people get a big verdict.
Well, what is the, from a legal standpoint, when I never went to law school, but I picked up from attorneys I know, and you know how much you guys argue, so you can get different points of view from different attorneys, right? But I seem to recall if somebody had a problem where they couldn't work, now granted there's always been pain and suffering and those kinds of things, there was some sort of a gauge where this guy was going to make 60 grand a year for his next 30 years or something, and you multiplied it times 30, and you threw in some care and some pain and suffering. The idea, somehow it is morphed into, and I'm not at all compensating people for their losses. I mean, I'm not saying that again. But somehow this idea that if we give a big firm or a big hospital or somebody this outrageous amount of money, that it's gonna change practice. They'll learn from this, or you know, I mean, if you give Commonwealth Edison a $2 billion fine, which of course they never do, but if they did, they don't care. It's now become a cost that goes into the next rate increase. I mean, you don't say everybody in the Commonwealth. I mean, I don't know why I'm picking on them. You don't say everybody in the Commonwealth Edison board better get your fanny off it, or the hospital say who's in charge of this place, fire them. You don't do anything that causes, you know, it's like, I'll use a war, it's like when we firebombed Dresden in World War II, late in the war. Those people had no more ability than the man in the moon to get rid of Hitler. So what's the point? I mean, I wonder what the point is of all this.
It was shock and awe. And just like, and that was used in Iraq by, both Bushes, actually, father and son.
Well, so you give this person, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be, you give this person $50 million in the hospital. What exactly have you accomplished?
Well, nothing. You've hit it exactly right. And actually, I studied this when I went to law school. Actually, going back to your earlier discussion on veterans' benefits and so forth, I actually took two courses that were entirely about how courts should assess diseases and compensate for them. And they were extremely interesting and useful courses. One was taught entirely by people who were both medical doctors who evaluate this stuff. The other was by a leader in what's called the law and economics movement. And his course was called Tragic Choices, and it was the most useful course I've ever taken because it's about how society should compensate for the inevitable death that occurs and what's a good way to do it. And the professor, Guido Calabresi, actually led the movement to have no-fault auto insurance, and by analogy with what you're saying, some of your older listeners may recall that before No Fault Insurance, every fender bender had to be almost a lawsuit. And this...
Well, there had to be a guy who caused it.
Yeah, and the professor said this is incredibly inefficient. This was around early 1960s. And this led to the current regime where most minor accidents are no-fault insurance, and it's only in the big complicated ones you have to go to court. But some systems like that should be applied to the situations you're raising, but people have to care. They have to do some work and be empowered to solve the problems.
Which brings me to my last question or two. I'm glad I got you guys on, because next Thursday is Thanksgiving. Might have to wiggle you guys on for a short one somewhere else during the week. but, you know, the city of Chicago is paying out all these big settlements for people that were jailed improperly. Okay, well, I can't imagine what it would be like to spend 20 years in jail if you did something, much less if you didn't do anything. There's got to be some, okay, Joe, you're never going to have to work again. We're going to pay you $250,000 a year. By the way, we're going to give you $5,000 four times for a week-long vacation for all the years you didn't get to go. Some whatever it is, formula that makes some sort of sense. This idea of $20 million and somehow the city will learn by that ain't happening. Now, if the $20 million, I would want to see this because obviously I have police plates. My dad was a policeman, but if it came out of the policeman's pension fund, I wouldn't like that either. But at least then, you might say, "Hey guys, you knew this guy was doing this, and nobody ratted at him. Maybe next time you will." Some attempt somewhere to put the penalty where there might have been some.
Well, exactly, and it's difficult to create that system and make it work, but it's not impossible. And the reason that none of the 200 professional attorneys working for the Eastern District of Virginia will help the Trump administration on these Comey and Letitia James cases is they don't want to lose their law licenses. So there are systems, if people think about it and enforce them, and they might get fired, these 200 people, but at least they can earn a living with a law license, and they've collectively and individually made a decision. I'd rather have a law license than an extra 6 months or a year on the job here. And going to your Chicago Police Department, they should have mechanisms, and they should figure out how to make them work. But a jury award of $20 million, you're absolutely right, that's not the way to achieve accountability. It's got to be more granular.
Well, plus I think the person, there should be some formula. Here's all the money you lost. Here's the time you lost. Here's about 15 vacations, which you surely as hell deserve. Something. I mean, I wouldn't be the guy who could.
There are formulas, but ultimately what happens is you get pissed off members of the jury that just almost disregard the formula, and then you have an appeal court process to knock it down. But maybe people wouldn't be so ticked off if the situations weren't outrageous.
Well, I mean, I look at what happens if one of us, now if we went in together, it wouldn't be so much dough, I guess. What if one of us won a $1 billion lottery? What am I going to do with it? I mean, I take you guys to dinner 5 nights a week, where all of a sudden we're tired of looking at each other.
I
go buy a yacht. I don't even like a yacht. What am I going to do with it?
I always say if I won that kind of money, I'd buy a huge ranch and take in as many abused animals and stray animals as I could.
What about abused people like us? Can we come over?
My sister said, "Well, you wouldn't give me any money." I said, "Heck no! I'd only give it, for the animals."
I would. This is no kidding. I've thought of this. I would get a really nice 12 flat in some small town in Ireland within walking distance to about 5 bars and restaurants, and I'd have an apartment for all you guys to come when you needed to.
I like that idea.
With a golf, we could walk to the golf course. We have a little golf cart. We take the golf cart to the golf course. And
well, let's have a practice run at your favorite joints on the south side.
As long as it's not the Trump golf course in Ireland.
Oh, God. Oh, God. So what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? I'm trying to get you on some other day next week for a little bit at least.
That would be great.
And God, it's not like there's not enough stuff to talk about, is there?
Oh, no, and there's more and more. We're getting into the interesting times now in a political scandal.
Well, you guys, I mean, we have to sort of admit on the Saudi thing from day one. I don't know if we went beyond Bush when who was in office when the oil embargo happened, and we cut a deal with them then, and then we let them buy stuff from the balance sheet and without naming who bought the
TV. That goes back to Nixon and Ford.
But there hasn't been somebody along the line yet that doesn't make a deal with the devil over there. I mean, what did Truman say? He may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Yeah, and it was FDR that cut the first agreement and defense alliance with Saudi Arabia.
Well, last quick thing. Let's not forget that it's not just the Khashoggi sawing him up and killing him thing, but remember how they got a lot of the rich people over there and took them to the Ritz-Carlton and hung them upside down
and remember that night incident called 9/11?
Yeah, well, he forgave him for that. You heard of that? He actually said that. By the way, what was the name of the guy? The Saudi, very rich gentleman, but he went to all the different countries, and he would have parties in the desert where they bring out all these rugs, and some guys would show up on camels and others on SUVs. And he was in the thing for a month. What was his name? Haven't heard about him since.
Oh, a Prince Talal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got a nice stay at the Ritz-Carlton over there.
He was part owner of Fox News.
Well, what happened to him? Is he anywhere now, or is he dead, or what?
Yeah, no, he's still around somewhere. He had to sacrifice some of his riches to the Salman.
Yeah, whatever the new guy's
Salman,
name.
Salman, yeah.
Oh, God. All right, guys, have a nice, it's you only too. Thursday, but have a nice weekend. Are you you're in Florida, you're in Washington. No connection here. Florida.
Well, we're getting Wayne is coming up for an annual Christmas author's dinner. And Wayne's got two new books to share with the crowd that he's going to report on. So.
Well, good. All right, guys. We'll talk at you next week at some time. S&P futures up 109. If you're long today, yes. NASDAQ futures up 523. I never thought that the NVIDIA chairman, who I'm not all that comfortable with, could save the world. But evidently he did. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.